Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on Your Home Connection. It's hot out there, and not just the weather, but real estate too. So we want to cover a lot of topics that will help real estate agents and home buyers and sellers stay out of trouble and hopefully have a pleasant experience. My name is Philippe Heller. I'm the president of the Real Estate Inspection Company, and we work throughout San Diego and been around for about 12 years. So we've seen just about everything, and I think you'll find today's topic very informative. It is especially important for everybody involved in the transaction. Our main topic today is unpermitted additions. And I happen to live in Ramona, which seems to have an inordinate amount of these. And it's super important for agents to avoid this pitfall. And I've got some great guests today in the studio, Denise Ossie from Coldwell Banker and David Hultinen, who is an expert on navigating the process of getting properties with additions permitted after the fact. So first off, I want to introduce Denise Ossie. She's been an agent for nearly 20 years, and she works all over San Diego, but her prime area is mostly, I'd say, East County. So Denise, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Denise Ossie. I'm with the Coldwell Banker office in La Mesa. And yes, I've been there for more than 18 years, and I do quite a bit of business. So
You do. We've worked together for a long, long time, and I know you just you do a ton of business, and so you've seen it all, I'd say.
I've seen quite a bit. I'll be surprised. Yeah. I guess I shouldn't be surprised at the things that still come up. So it's a fun game.
Yeah. Now, David, how long have you been doing this? What's your business?
I'm an architect. I've been at it since 79. I got out of college and moved to California, and I've been here ever since. I've been self-employed and licensed to be a service business. I'm delighted to be doing what I'm doing.
That's great, because if you don't like what you're doing, it's not worth the money. That's for sure.
Touché.
Yeah, yeah. So Denise, let us know, how is business right now? It's been so hot. We're swamped. I know a lot of the real estate agents we know are booked solid, but in particular, East County is kind of a phenomenon. It's so busy and it's so big. People don't really think about it, especially if they live along the coast. But tell us what areas are hot and what's going on in East County.
Well, our joke in real estate is drive east until you qualify. So all the people that can't afford to live in the beach, we head on east. So come and see me. So basically, the market is more affordable, obviously, out there. The commute these days isn't too bad getting anywhere. So you can get anywhere pretty much from, say, for example, from Santee in about 20 minutes. So that is a really hot market right now, is to be out in Santee with all of the shopping, the trolley, everything that it has to offer out there. It's quite the place to be. So as far as the market's been hot, just like the weather, just like you said. So the houses are moving rather quickly. Inventory continues to stay low. We hit a small little, we'll call it a lull in the market in June. The first few weeks were quiet, but it picked right back up again. And here we go again. So interest rates are phenomenal. So that's made the buying power amazing. What I have noticed is there's been a trend from where we went from the market where everybody wanted a fixer to everyone is done with a fixer. They want to buy a house that is move-in ready. They're willing to pay a little bit more since the interest rates are low. They want a house they can just really move into and make it their own without having to do all the improvements.
Right, and those 125% loans don't exist anymore.
They do not. They have some skin in the game. They're coming in with some money. And actually, the buyers we're seeing these days actually have more cash in hand and more money in their bank than they do from, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Maybe they took the time to save up a bit, and it's a much more solid investment that way, and it works out better in the long run to not be upside down from day one.
Yes, we're seeing that they have a long-term investment when they come into it rather than the ideal that they're going to move in 2 years. So they're looking at it as a long-term
Now, are
plan.
You seeing bidding wars with all the activity?
Yes, and that we are, actually. If the houses are priced well, I mean, you know if it's priced well. You really can't underprice the house these days. If the house is priced well, you should receive an offer within the first few weeks, and most times we're receiving multiple offers on that. If the house is overpriced, we tend to chase the market and trying to find that sweet spot to bring the buyers in. And the best I can say is worth is a dangerous word. I learned that a long time ago, and that property is only worth what a buyer is willing to pay. So worth is an emotional word, and I try not to use that with my clients.
That's true. It's just like a car or anything. It's only worth what somebody's willing to spend on it. So
they find the value in it.
Now, what areas? I know Santee's undergone a lot of growth in the extension of the freeway, and like you pointed out, the trolley's been a huge boom for it. My sister-in-law actually lives in Santee, and my niece. Mm-hmm. Where else in East County do you see a lot of growth with those new homes that you're talking about that people want?
Everything as far as new homes has been small little patches. Mm-hmm. So we're not seeing anything extensive. Everything's been, you know, anywhere from the row homes or town homes to the single family, but they're on a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing them to be in small bunches, anywhere from 6 to 20 homes, if that. The biggest development was put in last year, just right on the border of Santee and Lakeside, where the Home of Guiding Hands used to be off Los Ranchitos. So that was one of the bigger developments that came out. But there's a few here and there in Lakeside. You know, there's still some homes out there off East Main and in Lakeside that came up. And there's a few little patches in La Mesa. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of all over, but they're hit or miss, even El Cajon. So.
Okay, well, since you work in East County, and I know that some of the properties out there are a little older and perhaps the regulations were a little more loosey-goosey over the years, so
yes.
I know that you've come across some homes that are listed that may have a garage conversion or an addition or enclosed patio or a patio that's
yes.
been enclosed. So
yes.
what do you see when someone comes to you and says, Denise, I want to list my house, but I have to tell you, I have this room that we added on the back, and it's not permitted.
Well, a lot of times, well, we do talk about that, obviously, because there can be a problem with the buyer's financing coming in to purchase a property without that being permitted. So it depends on what type of room it is, if they were using it. If it was just an enclosed patio, that may just be extra space. We call it a bonus room. We try not to include that in the square footage when we're figuring out basically the price per square foot, if you're looking at it that way. It really comes into, does it add value to the property to the buyer? Because again, I can't use it in the square footage as far as
appraisal.
Far as price. Yeah, the appraisal really won't give it any value either. It's more, I'm more worried about the buyer side of it coming in and what the potential problems could be. I mean, it can happen to the buyer or the seller if the city decides to come in and tag that,
sure.
which has happened.
But when you're you take a listing and you obviously counsel the sellers to disclose
yes.
the fact that it's not permitted, because a lot of times they don't want to. They figure if they don't say anything, no one's going to know. But if you have a buyer, it's very important to tell that buyer, look, unpermitted additions can be problematic. You can't get the appraisal based on that addition, correct? And so what advice do you have for maybe new agents, new buyer's agents, or even buyers who are out there for the first time about when they're looking at houses and they kind of fall in love with it, but it's got, you know, what should they look for?
As long as they understand that there is a potential risk involved. I mean, I just had one that this happened a few months ago. They fell in love with this house that was a 3-bedroom, you know, 2-bath. That really it was a 2-bedroom, 1-bath. The 1-car garage had been converted, and this was a property in El Cajon. Mm-hmm. The conversion had been done probably 20 plus years ago. The neighborhood was pretty standard for 2-bedroom, 1-bath homes and with the small 1-car garage. So this was pretty normal that this was done, but it was done with no permits. The seller did disclose it. However, the buyer still fell in love with it. We went through, did our inspections. And of course, they asked me the same question. Well, is there a problem with this non-permitted? I said, well, I can't see through walls, but the city could come in and have a problem with it. And lo and behold, after 18 years, the city came out and actually did cite the property while we were in escrow. Good for my buyers because it didn't happen after the fact. But basically, the city came in and required that the seller pay to have it converted back to the 1-car garage. And basically, I take the house off the market. So what they were trying to sell was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, which turned around to be a 2-bedroom, 1-bath.
Yeah, and it doesn't take much to get turned in. It could be a neighbor who was disgruntled with the seller or just, you know, doesn't want, you know, you parking on the street. They want that garage, so you
yes.
have your car off the street,
yes.
and it really doesn't take much. So that's something, as an inspector, we try and point that out. Although, like you, we can't see through walls, but there are some telltale signs, which we'll talk about on the other side of the break, about some of the things we look for as inspectors that can be signs of an addition. Now, we don't know if it's permitted or not, but we do try and bring an addition to the attention of the buyer. And it could be something from windows that don't match the rest of the house to, you know, the stucco. There's little cracks or different textures inside on the drywall inside, lack of a foundation. There's a few things that we can go into in a little bit more depth that the buyers can look at. But we'll get to that on the other side, and we'll bring David in and talk about some of the steps that can be taken and what some of the pitfalls are if you do buy, if you think that, oh, no big deal, because it can be a big problem.
Yes, it can.
Okay.
I wish I was homeward bound.
Okay, and we're back with Denise Ossie and David Holtonen talking about unpermitted additions and how they affect real estate transactions and things to look out for. So, David, let's go back a little bit. And you're an architect, but how did you get into the specific business of doing as-built permitting?
Well, it's might I just say, it's an awesome opportunity to be here. Denise, nice job. Philippe, thank you.
No problem.
I immigrated in 76 from University of Cincinnati to Ocean Beach. And I set up an office with a partner there. And from the very get-go, we encountered bootlegged conversions. Everywhere we looked, there were bootleg conversions because land, even at that time, was not quite the exotic investment that it was about to become. Within 3 years' time, 4 years' time, we're looking at high-dollar transactions where permit records, if they weren't available, you better either restore it to what it is, get it retro-permitted, or tear it down.
Yeah, and those beach areas are known for that because they rent them out and they try and squeeze as many bedrooms as possible in there.
Plus, it's a visible problem when you congest the parking. You know, and it's so this was the beginning of something that beach cities wide up and down the state, I've been able to enjoy a burgeoning market. I got involved in it early. And then it became sort of countywide. I moved to North County and I became affiliated with inland areas like Denise's zone and Escondido, Fallbrook. I start hearing that there are field-initiated, complaint-originated, it's called a FICO, citations being contemplated for people who've, say, decide to house some families in a three-car garage.
So let's go back. What is a field-originated complaint?
Complaint originated. So FICO, exactly. It's a neighbor or just an incoming report, a visitor who says, you know, a prospect buyer who wants a property and says, you know, I really want that property, but this fellow accidentally disclosed that he has a bootlegged addition, a bootlegged improvement, a two-story workshop in an avocado grove. He says, I'd like to get that property. He turns around and turns this fellow in, and now he's in a much better bargaining position. Kind of cutthroat tactic, but I've seen it. It's the permit process also, I call it a retro permit and plan check process. That I'm very careful about the words because existing conditions, if I use that in my documentations, refers to permitted items. As-built conditions are how I flag in my descriptive drawings items that need to be retro permit and plan check processed. Mm-hmm. And rather than disclose, Denise, you've seen this where we just, well, let's just disclose and try to get our money's worth. If you have a little bit of time and can endure this process with my office, we get you dollar for dollar the value that a permitted, legitimate home enhancement addition, even an outbuilding, what have you. These are why I do this. I win for these people, sometimes their peace of mind. Often, if they're honest and willing to play by the rules, there's a lot to be gained by this process of retro permitting.
Can I ask a question then?
Absolutely.
So if I were to take a listing and then had a non-permitted, you know, garage conversion, and there was room to add one on as the city mm-hmm. would require, so on and so forth, how long is that process where you come in to do your job to be able to get that permitted for me to be able to get the dollar amount I need, you know, for the sale of the house?
Good question. That's why I say it does take some time. The permit process is not speedy. But what's interesting is The Homeowners and Business Owners Relief Act does not require fines.
Oh.
And there are no penalties, per se, if you turn yourself in. So a legitimate fine, a discovery of this is germane to how it's treated, how the fee structure goes.
And that was through what?
This is called the Homeowners and Business Owners Relief Act. It's an older document, but it's been revised as recently as 2008. The county mentions...
Is that countywide?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
17 cities, I think. The Board of Supervisors took the action to reduce or eliminate building permit requirements on certain projects.
Wow.
And when you get involved in a field-initiated complaint-originated setting where there's a citation, now there are fines, there are time deadlines, and the pressures to do this are on. Let me not fail to remember that it's possible that a bootlegged addition is not legal, that it cannot be permitted.
Yeah, let's.
I'm not.
Right.
The magic isn't that great.
Yeah, we've seen some additions that. Yeah. So, for example, we've seen this numerous times, believe it or not, where somebody wires an addition with very, very thin wires that you would use on a sprinkler control system, right, which is an instant fire hazard. So, in situations where the workmanship is so bad, the county. Can require complete demolition of the conversion, right?
Oh, they do. That would be an extreme case because my efforts, my team, my affiliates would look at it and say, okay, well, this is under-engineered. This is under-structured. We obviously, with a few measures, prescriptive measures, come in and make it habitable, make it permittable, mm-hmm. make it retro-permittable. Mm-hmm. And That's kind of the art of it. Sometimes when you operate outside the law, home builders tend to be a little bit more fastidious, a little more detailed. And sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're under under the radar, and it's an accident waiting to happen, and you really need intervention.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Okay, so
absolutely.
On that issue right there, so say you have your house that was built in the 70s, and there was a conversion, and it was done, and you're not quite sure where it was. When that is facilitated and we work on that, when they go back, I'm sure that they're going to cut open a section of the wall to check the electrical. They're going to check the foundation. They're going to do some things like that. Do they go back and basically, when do they look at how they're going to do that? Obviously, they won't be built to today's standards because obviously these codes change year after year. Do they go back and do they kind of grandfather it in for the age of the house? Like, how do they do that?
I think it all depends, huh?
Okay.
That's my answer. But it's also true that depending upon the scope of the corrective measures required, sometimes, like an HOA will not allow a handrail to deviate from the development standard.
Correct.
And that could be grandfathered in. The code, though, is inviolable. And where safety matters...
Exceed that.
Access, you may be the only one in your group to be brought into the future kicking and screaming with compliance requirements.
Okay.
I'd imagine that decks have been a big issue because that's something that there is huge safety in and the codes have changed dramatically. So I'd imagine you cannot get a big deck that was built poorly 10 years ago. Permitted in its current condition, it probably has to be brought up to code.
Truly. And I think fire resistivity, accessibility, and code, just the dimensional...
Footings, everything.
Footings and hand railing heights and configurations, stair riser heights. That's what I specialize in. That's the punch list I use. It's tedious, but somebody's got to do it.
Now, what about liability? Is the person who did the work, even the homeowner, if, you know, a lot of times with all these flip houses, they just say, well, I'm not a contractor, so I don't have to, you know, meet certain requirements. But let's say somebody did fall over a low railing and hurt themselves. Is that a huge liability for the person doing it without a permit?
You know, it sure sounds like it. You know, I would guess yes. You know, especially in a resale setting where I'm going to sell you my house and move on, I've heard of the just a variation in riser heights in a stair that was built, especially if it was built without inspections, without building permit. These are problems. These are litigation grounds, and it's a scary. These are high risk, high return enterprise. It's kind of why I like doing it. Yeah. It's an intervention that can mean something to everybody, all the players.
I know right now a very good friend of mine who's also a real estate agent is embroiled in a situation about stair risers where she simply just showed a house to somebody who fell because of uneven stairs and got dragged into a lawsuit, not knowing anything about the home. So it is absolutely, you got
to
do things right.
You get to be present to win.
People, when yes. you do these additions, hire somebody who knows what they're doing if you don't know, because it is a liability. I can guarantee that. So back to Denise, what you asked, which is, what is the process? So Denise comes to you, David, and says, look, we have this converted garage, and we want to make it legal so that we can get a full appraised value on this house. What's the process, and should the sellers do it, or should they wait till the escrow closes and have the buyers do it?
And we can use a scenario that there is room to build another garage as the city would require. So all of those things are already there. Walls already up, electrical's already done. It looks like everything is done to code. So if we go on that basis, how long of a process is it? And yes, who starts it?
I start it.
Okay.
And I begin by getting all the existing conditions, data, and documents that I can. I go to the county with the owner's authorization to release County of San Diego assessor's records. And that's a residential building record or a commercial building record. It's an amazing document. Coupled with a simple assessor's parcel map, I get a real clean picture of what items of what I find out there. I haven't even made the visit yet. What items I find are permitted and what are not.
Okay.
That may be the only record that I have. So this is an owner's signatured authorization for me to go down and go to the county recorder and pilfer the records.
Okay.
And it's a powerful place to begin. But without that informed beginning, it's speculation.
Okay.
So that's how I start. And I get as much information as I can even before I physically investigate. That follows. I take a complete photo and dimensioned look at what's existing and troubleshoot what I can see.
Now, do you have to go through and try and find the documentation for HOA rules or anything like that? Is that within your scope of work?
Indeed.
Okay.
Yes, all the data that I can get.
Okay.
And would you say that process, and for the example I was giving for this garage, non-HOA, if you will, just quick, was that, is it, do you think that's more of a like a 6-week process or a 6-month process?
I would lean in the direction of 6 weeks. If we're turning ourselves in, let's just do that. Let's get that. And it might even be over the counter.
Thank you.
I don't see habitability being an issue.
Mercy of the court. Okay. So, yeah, we're going to talk about this because as home inspectors, one of the big trends we see are pre-listing inspections. And this is something that dovetails nicely with pre-listing. And I think we're going to start, really promoting that people do get unpermitted modifications permitted before they go on the market. And again, our job, we view it as trying to keep everybody's liability down to its bare minimum. Sellers, agents, ours, the buyers. So I think it's such a great topic. As a matter of fact, we're going to dive deep into really the steps taken and both sellers and buyers, what is expected of them, perhaps some of the costs involved in going through the county, what some of the fees and penalties might be if they don't get the permit's done. And we'll go into that on the other side of the break. So stay with us.
Very cool. Very good.
We're back with Your Home Connection. I'm Philippe Heller, and I'm joined today with Denise and David. And we've been talking about unpermitted additions and how they can affect both the sale and purchase of a home. And one of the things that's becoming more popular, as I mentioned before, are pre-listing inspections. And we are definitely going to provide more information on this because It's such an important thing, and it's so much easier on the sellers to get that pre-listing inspection and find out these issues that can cost them a lot less than if they come up during escrow. And then the buyer's asking for all sorts of money to get these things repaired because they want their contractor to do it and whatnot. This falls right in line with that, where we recognize something that hasn't been up to code, that clearly wasn't permitted, and really, sellers, you should definitely recommend, if you only have to spend a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars getting something permitted, and as David pointed out, if you go to the county or the city where you live and say, look, I have this, there are a lot of fines and fees that you will avoid. So how does that process work? Let's dive a little bit more into that.
Well, first, I just wanted to mention that a general contractor, oddly enough, is not the likely candidate to do this inspection, nor is the architect. It's too much to rely upon them to do this. I think something like the real estate inspection company. This is a quicker overview, and their tactics and the technology they bring to document these existing conditions is peculiarly valuable to that process. Having said that, though, I have to start relying more on outside inspections thoroughly. I do my own. I'm as thorough as I can be. But there are site conditions, even hydrology, septic systems, vegetation, erosion, and even survey type information, where checking my nearness to the property line, or title company information, where are easements. When that's not documented perfectly, then I'm already in jeopardy. I don't do those things.
You brought up a good point, which is even if the addition was done exactly right, up to code, not permitted, but you added on a bedroom suite with a bathroom, but the septic system is not suitable for that, it may trigger a huge problem with the septic system, and it has nothing to do with the actual unpermitted addition, but it has some ancillary effects that could cost a lot of money.
The horse barn addition for my friend in Fallbrook, when it was beautiful, it was marketed by an expert, just an exquisite barn building company. They installed it as part of their purchase price right on top of their septic leach field. Mm. And another incident just recently, the garage that was built in the middle of 6 acres in Fallbrook, one of my customers bought an all-metal garage for her motor home. And the location of it was bad, but it was done without a permit. And 8 estate-grade homes in the neighborhood said, what's going on? This is a... you're grading without a permit. You're building this thing. And it turned out that I'm still working on that one. It's like, what were they thinking? And my customer was taken advantage of unfairly. Yeah. Existing conditions documentations, though, is a start. And I usually troubleshoot it with the help of my affiliate, structural engineer, maybe even an electrician, just to get my own fix involved. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the fix. That doesn't come usually from an inspector.
Right.
I'm more interested in solving the problem.
We just point out what's wrong. We don't say how to make it right.
Identifying the problem is the proper identification of the problem is usually the solution, though. Mm-hmm. And that's information is power. And I like to... it's a linear process, pretty much. I'm a nuts and bolts guy. It is a service that I render, but there's some art to it.
So after your initial assessment and whatnot, and you go to the county or city building department, and you say this is what's going on. So then what are the next steps? You get your other contractors in to get a scope of work for the repairs, and do you drop plans and I guess file for permits?
And then I apply for a retro permit.
Okay.
And the plan check process determines how adequate my drawings are for permit issuance. Once we get the permit, then we can bid this improvement. There, we'll find different ways of solving the same problem that have a cost impact. Mm-hmm. But I'm involved in all those phases, and I'm happy to do that because it's a good design pays. Mm-hmm. Good design pays.
Well, and not only that, but permits pay, because Denise, you were saying that if it's properly permitted, then a seller may spend a few thousand dollars bringing it up to code and permitting it. But what does that result in the selling price?
Well, a lot. I mean, you're getting your money back out of it. You also don't have a buyer who's trying to nickel and dime you to death saying, well, we're not sure what's in the wall. We're not sure how this was built. We don't know if we really want to pay that dollar amount. What if? So, and it's everything from just the way it was maybe built to the way that it's attached. Not sure how the roof line is or the flooring or the foundation, any of that. The mm-hmm. electrical, how it's set in. All of those questions come up. So it's just to give peace of mind, yes, to know that you have a quality product with the rest of the house.
Well, and the big thing is that even if they pay David for his fee and they correct whatever issues are and they get those permits, now all of a sudden it may add 500 square feet, 1,000 square feet to a house.
Big difference.
And suddenly they're
appraising. It moves appraising. You into a new category.
Exactly.
I mean, and the reason why is because that 300, 400, 500 square feet, I mean, when we're talking to do our appraisals, when we're pulling together our comparables to give to those appraisals, to the appraisers, we provide them the comparables for that property within a mile, you know, within 15% of the permitted square footage. That's a key word. Mm-hmm. 15% of the permitted square footage is what we're pulling. Mm-hmm. So if we now have an additional 500 square feet or 300, that moves you into a whole new pool. Now we're playing a new game. Now,
exactly.
So it is a big deal to go back and pull those numbers. So it's obviously more profitable to the seller.
So David, why do people not get permits?
The most legitimate one I found was that a family member, for one odd reason or another, needs to move in to the residence and they maybe enclose a patio and make it grandpa's retirement room for now. And it has to happen. There's a time frame. And that's almost legitimate, you know, mm-hmm. and my heart goes out to them. But the permit process, we confess that this is the process we've embarked upon, and that's the rule. As long as they've hired me, we are organized as a team, and the information is on the table. The county, it's an odd perspective, but the county or the agency, let me talk about 17 cities countywide, they are your only friend mm-hmm. in this thing, truly. They're not the enemy. And as long as they are our only friend, we can win this. We have a shot at negotiating a fairer settlement.
So with your experience and how long you've been doing this, I can kind of say this in my own words, that you pretty much have the secret handshake of how to get things done with the county or the cities involved. Because I will tell you from my own experience and going in to ask questions, if you don't know the right questions to ask, you don't know the correct counter to go to, your question doesn't get answered. So that's why I'm saying that you have the magic, the secret handshake to know which department to go to get those things done, get the process done in a timely and efficient manner.
There's a crucial component to the documentations that are presented when acquiring a permit, and that is conditions invisible at the site. Mm. And there, I rely on my structural engineer or my own experience and judgment and I write a letter that testifies, that certifies that conditions observed on site are in compliance with codes in effect at that time.
Okay.
And the county, bless them, doesn't approve drawings anymore. They just take no exception. My stamp or my affiliate engineers, electrical, mechanical, structural, or in the architectural stamp, the statute of limitations of that on that building is the life of the building.
Mm. Okay.
So the liability is a moving, growing concern, more on our side of the table than it used to be. But great question. And some of these antique buildings settings that I investigate are obviously in hyper compliance with the intent of the code today.
Okay.
So not every old building is a bad one.
Right.
Correct.
Now, are there places in San Diego that are easier or more difficult to work with in your experience?
Great question. I think The county, because of the prevalence of bootlegged additions, I like mm-hmm. that term, you know, just unimproved, unpermitted improvements, the county lands where they're less dense tend to be a little more lenient. It's a little more forgivable. Urban settings, like Miramar Road, the car dealerships there are fraught. They're adjoining a federal property. Land, and they were all community that have turned into something fairly high tech with sign requirements and electrical requirements, of many of which have not been. I don't mean to pick on that. It's just that's one of my recent target client areas. Mm. And because of a complaint here, suddenly the historic records showed that, well, the skateboard park, where was that? Mm-hmm. And it's a.
So, not commercial properties, but for residential, uh-huh. would you say, like, you know, the dense beach areas or, I don't know, Encinitas is more difficult to get through the process than Vista or than Lakeside?
I wish I could say. The beach area, in my recent experience, has been they're armed. They know how to handle it.
Okay.
They're very decisive. And where there are leniencies, if you know the questions to ask, mm-hmm. you can make progress. If you don't, you get it, maybe that's the harder one. These denser beach areas, I would have to say, just due to the value of them.
Yes, exactly. You know? Now, speaking of value, that's a great point. I think some people don't get permits because they fear that their home is going to be reassessed and taxed at a much higher rate. And for example, somebody's owned a home since the 70s, and your example of having grandpa move back in and they convert the garage in Claremont, whatever, you know, I think they're worried that their tax base is going to be reassessed at today's value. And so they try to avoid that and stay under the radar. Is that a reasonable fear?
Yes. I think that's a reasonable, the tax valuation would go up.
Okay.
A notice of completion triggers that, possibly the revaluation of the property. I also do think, though, that the insurability of the property is at stake. If the insurance company doesn't know what they're really insuring, then a claim horrible eventuality could be denied.
Or even a fire.
A fire.
Room burns down, they're not going to rebuild that room.
Truly.
So that's absolutely.
That bootleg area, that's where the fire started. Thanks for your premiums.
Yeah, we're not.
You're on your own.
We're going to go.
And we have tons of pictures. I like to put up some of the crazy stuff that we see at inspections, including that poor wiring we saw on our Facebook page. If anyone's interested, they can go, not for the show, but facebook.com/SDinspections, and you can see a lot of crazy pictures, everything from finding coffins at homes to bad wiring and snakes in the electric panel and all sorts of crazy stuff that we see out there. So when we get back on the other side of the break, we're going to see what the result of David's hard work is and how he gets through it and, what happens. And Denise, I want you to share some other situations that you've been involved in. I know you've been in some pretty, pretty hardcore stuff and how that affects the buyers. So when we get back, we'll dive a little bit deeper into this.
Thanks.
Excellent.
All right, we're back for our last segment of the show. It's been great. I think this information has been super useful. I hope real estate agents, buyers, sellers, everybody involved really takes this to heart. We have so much information. I wanted to get to new smoke detector requirements and carbon monoxide, which we'll get to perhaps on another show. But I think that this, because there's so much liability and so much risk of litigation, that this unpermitted addition is something that's really important. So, David, we left off where you've gotten your subs to come out and give you a quote and a scope of work. And then what's the process like? Is it just like doing the addition as you should have, where you go get a permit now?
Usually, as I'm submitting for plan check and permit process, I invite a general. We'll negotiate a contract. Ideally, we negotiate a contract with a pre-qualified remodeling contractor. It's not as straightforward often as a new project, but it's biddable. My documents can be tailored to competitive or comparative bidding setting or a negotiated setting, say a family friend who's a pre-qualified general contractor could do it. Concurrently, as the city is plan checking or the county is plan checking, the contractor is preparing numbers for everybody's review. And we'll see that I usually do that during the design and corrective documentations measure, just to make sure that I'm in line budget-wise, that what I'm proposing isn't Rolls-Royce parts for a Ford. My company name, Two Scale Productions. I'm looking at appropriateness of my solution for the context.
Perfect.
That it's sensitive to the scale and scope of the work required.
Yeah.
I enjoy the opportunity, though, to kind of hands-on. I'm a little bit of a control agent that way. I try to keep to
the
a
project.
Low roar. The project scope realistic, and that it's understandable and rational. Otherwise, I'll change my documents. Yeah. We'll make it so.
So, Denise, let me know about a bad experience you had with this issue.
Okay, when the market was bad, I had a first-time home buyer look at a property in Lakeside because everything basically on the market then was a fixer-upper. I mean, we had some pretty bad properties out there. And this particular property had unpermitted rooms everywhere. I think the original house was 1,200 square feet. We got there, the multiple listing service listed it as 2,200 square feet. Even the tax rolls matched. Mm-hmm. But you could tell just things weren't correct. They wanted to proceed with purchasing the house and even did a renovation loan to buy, you know, to have the funds to be able to upgrade the house. Mm-hmm. Of course, I recommended that they go to the county. They check for permits, any and all permits. They got a copy of any and all permits, which was the water heater. Mm-hmm. And that was it. So still advised them, are you sure you want to have? So we had multiple conversations about this house. Are you sure you really want to do this? I explained, you know, what could happen. Yeah, we've got this. Went through the process. We closed escrow. 3 days later, while he's in the middle of putting a new roof on, the county came out and tagged the house and said, nope, there's plenty of permits here that are not up to code, not final, and tagged the house. And of course, he called and said, you know, what's going on? And anyway, lo and behold, this property had been tagged for a solid year prior to it being owned by the bank. Once the bank took it over, it magically wasn't tagged anymore. So during the whole process, the bank nor us, the listing agent, nobody had any clue that there would have been any tags. And after it was sold, it magically got tagged again. Anyway, we ended up going to a round table, sat with the county, with their attorneys, with my broker. We all went down there to try and help this first-time home buyer that has two children and a third on the way. By this house, it was the complete eyesore, not only of the street, but of the neighborhood, but of the community. Mm. And he was truly going to do a good thing in buying this house and making it a home. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of my argument with the county, is because they wanted to slap him with all kinds of fees and fines and for how long they've ever been, you know, it's been tagged.
Right.
And that was an argument. We were able to get all of that waived for him to do the work. But the truth was, it was beyond what he could truly do. This was beyond your typical carpet
and probably cost him
fixer.
A lot of money.
He lost the house. He never even made his first mortgage payment. He ended up just walking away from it, which was tragic.
Terrible experience.
Yeah. A flipper ended up coming to buy it, tore the house back down to 1,200 square feet. And
Amazing. Anyway,
it was a sad story for him. And since then, he purchased all his good. But that was a sad time.
Yeah, those were tough times. All right. Well, our time just goes by too quickly, and I wanted to make sure that people who needed the service of two experts knew how to get a hold of you. So, Denise, how can, if somebody's looking to sell or buy or just has real estate questions or even a new agent who's looking to, you know, have a mentor, how can people get a hold of you?
They can email me. They can visit the website if you want to look up anything about me, or even visit my Zillow page if they wanted to, just to read reviews about me. So my name, Denise, is actually spelled a little different. So if you look me up, it's Deniese. And I'm at the Coldwell Banker office in La Mesa, but you can look me up on my website, which is myneighborhoodsearch.com. So that one's pretty easy. You don't even have to take your hands off the steering wheel to write that down. But again, myneighborhoodsearch.com. My phone number is 619-251 7546 if you'd like to give me a call.
Yep, or you can post on our homeconnectradio.com Facebook page. That brings you right to our Facebook page, and you can always reach out to us there. Now, David, how can people reach out to you?
My office is in San Marcos, California. My website is 2scaleproductions.com. That's numeral 2, Arabic numeral 2, right off the face of your watch, 2scaleproductions. My phone number is 760-505-6473. And let's see. If you're in San Marcos, drop by.
Yes. Drop by. And again, of course, if people want to get in touch with David and you happen to be driving right now and you can't remember, please reach out to me. I can be reached at our Facebook page for the radio show at homeconnectradio.com, or you can email me at pheller@sdinspect.com. And we're there for you for all your questions about home inspections and real estate. We can point you in the right direction.
Cool.
And I look forward to sharing a lot more information about homes and new technologies with regards to carbon monoxide detectors and smoke detectors. Believe it or not, we can take a whole show on that and the new requirements, because it causes a lot of problems. So please be sure to look us up. And if you don't have time to listen to the whole show, we will post it again. And until next time, this is Philippe Heller. Thank you.
Very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so